This is the Down East Journal on Public Radio East. Earlier this month, a new statewide initiative was announced that seeks to improve mental health and substance abuse crisis services in North Carolina by bringing healthcare, government, law enforcement, and community leaders together to identify help for individuals experiencing a mental health or substance abuse crisis. Today, Mac McKee speaks with the director of the Division of Mental Health, Dave Richard, about the new initiative.
Each year, there are 150,000 visits to emergency departments in North Carolina related to an acute psychiatric or addictive disorder crisis. Now, as many as 13% of people treated in emergency situations could return in 30 days, and as many as 17% in our prison system have a serious mental illness. Now, these are disturbing statistics for North Carolina. Now, how do our statistics compare with those of the rest of the nation?
Well, North Carolina, unfortunately, is similar to the rest of the country. This is an issue that every state faces. The 13% is obviously too high. We know it's too high. The number of people that come to the emergency room who have a mental illness rather than other options is too high. And clearly, the number of people in our prison system is a national figure, and we mirror that figure in North Carolina, and it's obviously the wrong place to treat people, and we need to do something about that.
I understand that you've been appointed to head up the Crisis Solutions Coalition to address inefficiencies such as these in the state. Now, as far as the state's most pressing problems, what do you think they are regarding mental health issues, and are we making progress with a program such as this?
Well, we have a lot of issues that we have to face. First, I'd say that there are some really great programs going on across the state, and we want to recognize that. But we have is serious gaps in our system. Probably the most important things that we have to look at are the ongoing direct services that people with mental illness need in communities to make sure that they stay in recovery and they are getting the proper community treatment. We have to address what happens when people go into emergency circumstances like an emergency department visit to make sure we follow up immediately. And we do the same thing you would do for somebody with a heart attack, you know, make sure that they're getting the right aftercare as they go forward. And we have to make sure that that is in place as people go forward. And then we have to have other options for people that other than an emergency department, especially for our law enforcement folks and our first responders to know where someone should be able to go instead of those expensive and, frankly, not the right place to treat people at the emergency department.
Now, one of the primary goals of the Crisis Solution Initiative is the establishment of so-called walk-in crisis centers plus short-term residential treatment options. Now, are these options available here in Eastern North Carolina, and how do people access them?
They are available in Eastern North Carolina, but they wouldn't be available in every county. We run our system today through a series of local management entities, and in every one of those regional-based systems, there are walk-in crisis and some of these other services, but they vary in terms of the nature of one, where they're located, to the hours that they have available, and the intensity that we have in communities. So part of this goal is to make sure we have a variety of options that fit the local communities.
Could you explain the concepts behind the telepsychiatry programs and youth mental health first aid?
Yeah, the telepsychiatry is a really exciting effort. What we know is that we have a lack of mental health professionals, especially in rural areas across the state, and that primarily psychiatrists, when you think about the most important role that they play in our mental health system. So telepsychiatry allows for a physician who may be in, say, New Bern, to sit in front of a high-definition screen to provide treatment to somebody who may be in a much more rural county, a rural area of the state, or a place where there isn't access to a psychiatrist. So that effort allows for the individual to sit in front of that psychiatrist, not be in the same room, but have that kind of access. And we believe it is a great opportunity throughout hospitals across North Carolina to where every hospital will have the availability of a psychiatrist through this telepsych program is going forward. The mental health first aid is really exciting effort also. We know that addressing the issue of crisis in mental health services is not something our department or our division can do. It is something that across the community has to be, everybody has to be engaged in. Mental health first aid is an opportunity to help people like parents and pastors and school personnel to understand and recognize the early symptoms of stress or mental health and behavior disorders, and then allows for them to know who to speak to and who to help that individual get treatment with.
Mr. Richard, I know that this program, this initiative, do you think it's an important first step even for an ongoing problem?
Oh, absolutely. What is most important to us is this, is that we believe that focus from our department and bringing these partners together will begin to move the bar. We're committed to measuring our success through the measures that you've seen with the number of people who show up in emergency department, the length of stay that they have, and certainly the readmits. We want to make sure that that graph is going down. And the opportunity for us to engage in partners to sort of redirect our resources to the things that work the best as we go forward gives us a real opportunity to make a difference as we go forward.
Mr. Richard, one final question. Is there a website that lists locations where people can go for help that's close by in the area?
You know, it's a great question. One of the things we immediately identified was that there really isn't that comprehensive website that's statewide. Often law enforcement and first responders don't know where to go. So one of the first items that we'll be bringing online is a new website. It's not ready yet, but that will be happening in the next 6 weeks. But right now, certainly, and especially for your listeners, calling ECBH as their access line or checking their website would be the first thing to do.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Richard, for being with us on Down East Journal today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak about this.
A team of young men and women from around the country are helping to make Jones County and the town of Trenton a stronger community by helping out around the town and in a local school. The group is part of a national government organization called AmeriCorps National Civilian Community Corps that engages young adults ages 18 to 24 years old in team-based community service projects throughout the U.S. Michaela Morello is part of a six-member team called Delta 4.
Somebody from the county will go in and send an application saying, we need help with this. So our, it would be a site supervisor is what we call them, was Darlene, the mayor of Trenton, and Mr. White, the principal of Jones Middle School. And they basically sent a request saying that they needed help in the area.
AmeriCorps NCCC approved the application and sent Delta 4 to Jones County. 3 days each week, the team is tutoring students at Jones Middle School, and the other 2 days, they're involved in projects in Trenton.
We go into rural areas and we help doing a wide range of things. So we've done like environmental projects, construction projects. Right now we're working in the school.
Jones County Middle School Principal Michael White is an alumni of the National Civilian Community Corps program himself. He says this is the second team of NCCC members to come to the school.
They just offer a different light to our kids, and they're very positive. They come from everywhere. Nobody's from North Carolina. We hadn't had anybody from North Carolina yet, so it's pretty neat that kids are like, you're from where? Is it da-da-da? You know, they want to know about Oregon. They want to know about Texas. So it's actually bringing in the country to our kids as well.
Rohan Chowdhury, a member of the Delta 4 team, is helping out an eighth-grade math class. He's originally from Cincinnati, Ohio.
They've gone through rational and irrational numbers. Now they're learning square roots and some basic math concepts related to that. And I'm sort of going around and helping, making sure people are taking notes, understanding the concepts.
Not far from the math class, another Delta 4 team member is working one-on-one with a student on his writing assignment.
So, I just add an and here and take the comma out.
Well, you can leave the comma. You can leave the comma and put and, but then you have to say it does. You have to explain it does what. Because I don't know what it's doing.
Francis Ferrer is helping an eighth grade student out with an essay that is talking about uniforms in schools. And they're going over his writing and what he can fix, what he can add.
Even though the National Civilian Community Corps members are only at Jones County Middle School for a couple of months, Morello is experiencing firsthand the impact they're making.
There was a student I've been working with, Taiwan, and he is in eighth grade and he's working on this multiplication, and I just did a chart for him because, like, I just went back old school to what how I learned it, and then he was actually getting it, so that was fulfilling.
Delta 4 will be in eastern North Carolina until December 2nd. Jones County Middle School Principal Michael White says the results have been so successful that he's applied for another team to come in March 2014. He says they hope to know for sure by January. Organizations interested in hosting NCCC members must first submit a request. If approved, AmeriCorps will send an application form to be filled out. When the application is returned, it could take a couple of months to know if your organization is selected. For more information on AmeriCorps NCCC, visit our website, publicradioeast.org. I'm Jared Brumbaugh. The Down East Journal is made possible by our Public Radio East members in partnership with Craven Community College's Lifetime Learning Center, featuring its Best of Broadway day trip to see the musical Once on January 25th at the Durham Performing Arts Center. Once is the story of a Dublin street musician who's inspired by a beautiful young woman. Registration is now open, motor coach, lunch, and show ticket included. Information at 252-638-7351.
This is Ann Edwards, Horticulture Extension Agent, with this week's entry in the Garden Journal. It's the week for thankfulness, and there are so many things to be thankful for. I wanted to think about thankfulness in light of the garden, and there it's easy. First, I am thankful for things that grow and change with the seasons, for the tiny, bright green, new leaves that come out in the spring, and that maybe dry a little around the edges or get spots or otherwise don't look so beautiful for a while there in summer, but then turn gorgeous colors, almost shockingly beautiful in the fall before resting in the winter. I also am thankful for things that feed my love of, well, food. Fruit trees producing amazing citrus fruit, even though I'm in North Carolina here in November. And vegetables, gorgeous carrots pulling out of the ground right now. And collards and broccoli and all the other fall things that will be followed so early it's hard to believe in just a few months with spring peas and onions. And then the crops of summer. I'm really thankful for the things that feed my body from the garden. Then the things that make me smile. Sometimes the insects, especially the pollinators, they always bring a smile. And the chickens, whose manure I use to fertilize those fruit trees and those gorgeous ornamentals. They make me smile all the time. And I'm particularly thankful for rain. What is it about rain? The garden needs it, of course, and it washes everything clean. But the feeling in the air when there's going to be a rain and while the rain is falling, well, there's just nothing like a cloudy day with rain coming down to make you feel comfortable and peaceful and protected when you're inside your own home. So I'm thankful for the rain and the fact that it reminds me of how important it is to have a home where I can be safe. So in general, although it's very corny, I'm thankful for all the things in the garden that remind me of seasons, of the importance and beauty of change, of the abundance around us, whether it's an abundance of water or food or shade or color, and of the joy that comes from looking at the tiny things, the bee wallowing in pollen on a flower, or the chicken wallowing in the dry soil for a dust bath. I'm thankful for all of these, and I'm glad we have Thanksgiving once a year to remind me to take time to consider them. Thanksgiving's always been my favorite holiday, and I hope you had a wonderful one, and that you have a great weekend as winter sneaks up on us. Be thankful for that, too, and I'll talk to you in next week's entry in the Garden Journal.
Mothers Against Drunk Driving is reminding people to plan a designated driver when celebrating this holiday season. Their Taiwan On for Safety campaign is now underway across the state. In a recent survey, MAD found that 73% of adults 21 years of age or older have known someone who's tried to operate a vehicle after drinking too much. In an effort to reduce the amount of drunk driving fatalities, the group is encouraging people to attach a Taiwan On for Safety red ribbon on their vehicle's antenna. MAD State Executive Director LaRonda Scott.
They are a reminder for individuals to plan ahead and have a designated non-drinking driver for the holiday season, but it's also letting law enforcement know that we are supporting their efforts as they're on the roads, making our roads safer.
According to Scott, drunk driving caused 16 motor vehicle deaths during the holiday season in 2012. The Taiwan On for Safety campaign runs until New Year's. The State Highway Patrol says they see an increase in drinking and driving during the holidays. Public Information Officer for Sergeant Jeff Gordon says they'll be stepping up patrols of North Carolina roadways looking for impaired drivers.
A lot of times we'll stop individuals and they're under the impression that they're fine to drive, and then come to find out they're over the .08 legal limit. So it is something that we take very seriously. We are going to be out, not only the Highway Patrol, but all law enforcement across the state. We want everybody to have a great time this holiday season, but we want people to be responsible.
Sergeant Gordon says the Booze It and Lose It campaign is underway. Highway Patrol will conduct DWI checkpoints and have more visible officers on the state's roadways. I'm Jared Brumbaugh. The typical view of the path to musical success sends the enterprising young musician into one of our country's media centers, New York or L.A. For the members of Asheville's The Broadcast, they're taking a road less traveled in an effort to establish a musical career. George Olson spoke with the band's lead singer, Caitlin Crisco, and has this.
I've long jokingly said that I'm still deciding what it is I want to be when I grow up. At 50 plus, the joke is getting old, as am I for that matter. Still, there's some truth behind the joke, which may be why I've always had a deep respect for anyone who determines what it is they want to be and pursue it doggedly with no doubt, no regrets. Among those now with my deep respect, Caitlin Crisco and her bandmates in the band The Broadcast.
And being in New York City, we realized, financially speaking, it really wasn't attainable to do that. We couldn't afford to pay our rent there and be on the road 150 days a year without, you know, spraining our back trying to get people to sublet our apartments and finding odd jobs in the city when we were actually in town. It was just really stressful to us. And then on a personal level, just growing up in New York, I had never really left home before after college, you know? And I just realized that I needed a new experience. And I think a lot of us realized we needed a new experience in order to be inspired creatively.
So the band packed up the van and moved to Asheville, with everyone moving into the same house so they could keep expenses down as they tried to follow a path they felt had been blazed by those who had musical success before them.
And so we started looking at the careers of bands that we loved. And when we were looking at the history of music, we noticed a pattern. And that pattern was, no matter what generation or decade it was, a lot of the greatest bands came from touring and literally sacrificing their lives to be able to tour full-time, bringing music similarly to a circus or a gypsy act. You go city to city, town to town, and you introduce your creative work to the people and hope that they respond to it.
There's an expression, how are you going to keep them on the farm once they've seen the bright lights of the big city? To some degree, Caitlin Crisco and The Broadcast had the bright lights, opted for the farm. They chose to take the road traveled most, just in reverse. Caitlin also got some against-the-grain advice while receiving training at Circle in the Square, a respected New York theater art school, that prodded her to consider a different path.
I had always intended on pursuing musical theater in my life, and had always planned on going the Broadway route. And I had a great music theory teacher in college, Marianne Ivan, who I'll always call out in interviews because she was such a pivotal moment for me. And she just planted a seed after my freshman year of college and said, you know, I think that you should be a rock star instead of a musical theater geek. And no one had ever told me that before. It was this aha moment that totally changed the direction of my life.
Rest of the members of the broadcast may have gotten similar advice in the past. In scanning biographies of the band's members, it seemed I came upon the word conservatory pretty regularly, to the point I half wondered if the broadcast was the revenge of the music room nerds. Caitlin didn't disagree.
With Michael Davis, our drummer, he was one of the star performer drummers at Manhattan School of Music. I mean, he's one of the best jazz drummers I've ever heard in my life. He's got a great side project, a trio called Enormous Trio, that is mind-boggling. And he's the go-to jazz drummer in Asheville now. And it's really funny that his passion project and his real focus is this rock and roll band that we've created. I think that there's just nothing quite like the energy that the broadcast shows bring to all of us. You know, we all do sort of side projects here and there just for fun, and we always come back to the broadcast because it's a workhorse. Hey, are you gonna waste it? Are you gonna go and throw this all away?
Virtuosity that might come from a conservatory education isn't immediately obvious in the broadcast new CD, Dodge the Arrow. It's well performed, but there's not a lot of what I've always termed give the drummer some moments, extended instrumental breaks that seem to say more about the performer's skill than its fit with the song. And that was the idea on Dodge the Arrow. Much as they emulated the road warrior-ness of bands they admired, they also wanted to model what they heard on their recordings.
And when we listened to records that we loved, and when we all started listing albums that meant a lot to us personally, they were pretty cut and dry records. You know, you listen to Led Zeppelin 4. I mean, it's a rock record, but there's not a whole lot of jamming. And if you listen to the Beatles, Abbey Road, or really any of the Beatles, there's really not a whole lot of jamming going on. And these records mean a lot to us, and we started to see a common thread. And we just didn't want to be long-winded with this record. I wanted to get to the point.
And they do. Dodge the Arrow is brevity defined, 8 songs running about 30 minutes. It's a paean to getting to the point and a realization of the times the broadcast is trying to survive in.
Let's be serious. People have very short attention spans now. And we can argue that, and we can say it's not true, and we can ignore it. Or we can embrace it, and we can learn how to work with it. And we can learn how to get people's attention enough in a way where they don't suddenly start skipping songs in the record. You know what I mean? I wanted people to turn on Dodge the Arrow and on the last note of the last song get upset about the fact that the record's over and want to turn it back on again.
Or better yet, go see a show. There's plenty of opportunity to do that. The band is constantly traveling, with Caitlin estimating since their move to Asheville in 2010, they average around 150 shows a year. The band is all in, from that commitment to touring whenever and wherever, to sharing living space, a decision Caitlin says has proven magical, and which she expects to reminisce on fondly in later years. They're all in another way as well. In the band's New York incarnation, they were Caitlin Crisco and the broadcast, Caitlin the headliner, the broadcast backing her up. Today, no more.
It was actually my suggestion to drop my name from the title. It was important to me to show unification. We're a family, and every single person in this band has sacrificed an enormous amount in their life to be able to pursue this as a career. And I thought that it was really important that each person was represented in the title of what we were setting out to do.
Again, all in.
Dodge the arrow as it's leaving from your bow. I can't believe it. In the end, what's it worth to you? You just stood there while conceding.
The new CD from Asheville's The Broadcast is entitled Dodge the Arrow. I'm George Olson.